So continuing on with the readings on the five khandhas. Today we'll hit the last couple of ones that Lungpa had picked out. And if we have time, I might add a little additional one, too. So this one is actually from the Magga Samyutta, Samyutta 45. Number 159, called the guest house. Bhikkhus, suppose there is a guest house. People come from the east, west, north, and south and lodge there. Kshatriyas, Brahmins, Vaisas, and Sudras come and lodge there. So too, when a bhikkhu develops and cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path, he fully understands by direct knowledge those things that are to be fully understood by direct knowledge. He abandons by direct knowledge those things that are to be abandoned by direct knowledge. He realizes by direct knowledge those things that are to be realized by direct knowledge. He develops by direct knowledge those things that are to be developed by direct knowledge. So you can see this is, these introduce the formula for the Four Noble Truths and the duties associated with the Four Noble Truths and applied it to this particular situation. And what, bhikkhus, are the things to be fully understood by direct knowledge? It should be said, the five aggregates subject to clinging. What five? The form aggregate subject to clinging. The feeling aggregate subject to clinging. The perception aggregate subject to clinging. The volitions aggregate subject to clinging. The consciousness aggregate subject to clinging. These are the things to be fully understood by direct knowledge. And what, bhikkhus, are the things to be abandoned by direct knowledge? Ignorance and craving for existence. These are the things to be abandoned by direct knowledge. And what, bhikkhus, are the things to be realized by direct knowledge? True knowledge and liberation. These are the things to be realized by direct knowledge. And what, bhikkhus, are the things to be developed by direct knowledge? Serenity and insight. These are the things to be developed by direct knowledge. And how is it, bhikkhus, that when a bhikkhu develops and cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path, he fully understands by direct knowledge those things that are to be fully understood by direct knowledge? And then the other ones up to, he develops by direct knowledge those things that are to be developed by direct knowledge. Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops right view and the Eightfold Path through right concentration, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release. In this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu develops and cultivates the Noble Eightfold Path so that he fully understands by direct knowledge those things that are to be fully understood and develops those things that are to be developed by direct knowledge. So at least in relation to the five aggregates subject to clinging, I think this sutta is pointing out mainly the duty around that understanding, essentially relating, I think, the five aggregates subject to clinging as equivalent to dukkha, as I think as everybody probably remembers from the first discourse, the Dhammacakka Sutta. Dukkha, the truth of dukkha, is actually in some described as the five aggregates subject to clinging, so that the duty for fully understanding dukkha would be the same then for to fully understand the five aggregates as they're subject to clinging, to see the clinging desire related to the five aggregates as a way of fully understanding suffering.
Seems to sort of tie in with the whole seeing that five aggregates, five khandhas arising, persisting, passing away is what leads to destruction and attains.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The origin and cessation is to destruction and attains. Yep. Yeah, the full understanding, I think, can be seen in a lot of different ways. The origin and the cessation, also in terms of the gratification, danger, and escape. That's another way to help fully understand. And then also along the lines of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And there's different angles that one approaches full understanding of the aggregates. Okay. Then there's this last of the several verses from Bhikkhunis that Mpa had tagged. Back to the Bhikkhuni Samyutta. This one is number 10, Vajira. Atsavati. Then in the morning, the Bhikkhuni Vajira dressed and taking a bowl and robe entered Savati for alms. When she had walked for alms in Savati and had returned from her alms round, after her meal she went to the blind men's grove for the day's abiding. Having plunged into the blind men's grove, she sat down at the foot of a tree for the day's abiding. Then Mara, the evil one, desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in the Bhikkhuni Vajira, desiring to make her fall away from concentration, approached her and addressed her in verse. By whom has this being been created? Where is the maker of the being? Where has the being arisen? Where does the being cease? Then it occurred to the Bhikkhuni Vajira, now who is this that recited the verse, a human being or a non-human being? Then it occurred to her, this is Mara the evil one, who has recited the verse desiring to arouse fear, trepidation, and terror in me, desiring to make me fall away from concentration. Then the Bhikkhuni Vajira, having understood, this is Mara, the evil one, replied to him in verses. Why now do you assume a being? Mara, is that your speculative view? This is a heap of sheer formations. Here no being is found. Just as, with an assemblage of parts, the word chariot is used, so when the aggregates exist, there is the convention, a being. It's only suffering that comes to be, suffering that stands and falls away. Nothing but suffering comes to be, nothing but suffering ceases. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the Bhikkhuni Vajira knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. So this is a very well-known simile that she introduces to Mara, the one of the chariot, which I thought that, and we've got plenty of time, so I was going to read some verses or some of the text from the Questions of King Milinda, because that's where this simile is actually expounded on a little bit more based on this passage. The other thing that is of note, I think, is the last stanza that she talks with. It's nothing but suffering comes to be and nothing but suffering ceases is very similar to the Kacchanagota Sutta, also in the Samyutta Nikaya number 12. That has a very pithy, it's a very short sutta, but pretty much says it all. And actually it comes up again in another one of the readings that I was going to do later on, so I'll save reading that particular sutta until later on. Questions on that before I read the exposition on the chariot? So the questions of King Milinda, I haven't really read through much of it other than this one particular one that I was looking at for tonight, but it's a slightly post-canonical collection, which is based on a number of, I guess, questions. Sometimes they're called debates, as translated by others, but as Bhikkhu Bodhi points out in the introduction here, they really don't sound a whole lot like debates. They're more like questions and answers of this King Milinda, who was existing around, I think, the first century BC, so maybe 400 years or so after the Buddha's time, in in what was then Northwest India, I guess, and now it seems like it's probably Afghanistan is the area that he was located in. He basically asked a number of questions along, you know, very mostly Buddhist themes to a very well-respected and learned bhikkhu named Nagasena. And this is the record of that. It's not part of the Pali canon that we recognize, although I was reading here that apparently the Burmese edition of the canon does incorporate it into the Kutaka Nikaya. But in the other versions, Theravada versions, it is considered post-canonical. But it has some good stuff in it, apparently. So this is this particular simile that we're talking about is right at the very beginning of the questions, the Milinda Panha. King Milinda then approached Venerable Nagasena, exchanged pleasant greetings with him, and sat on one side. Venerable Nagasena greeted the king in return and gladdened his heart. King Milinda asked Venerable Nagasena, "How is the revered one known? What is your name, revered sir?" "Sire, I am known as Nagasena. My companions in the holy life address me as Nagasena. Though parents give such names as Nagasena or Surasena or Virasena or Sihasena, this Nagasena is only a designation, a label, a concept, an expression, a mere name because there is no person as such that is found." Then King Milinda spoke thus, "Good sirs, let the Bactrian Greeks and the party of monks hear me." The Bactrian Greeks are, I think, where King Milinda, that's his nationality, or that's how he's referred to that part of the world. "This Nagasena says that, quote, no person as such is found." He then spoke thus to Venerable Nagasena, "If revered Nagasena, there is no person as such, who gives you robes, alms food, lodgings, and medicinal requisites, and who makes use of them? Who guards morality? Who meditates? Who realizes the paths and fruits and attains nibbana? Who kills living beings? Who takes what is not given? Who indulges in sexual misconduct? Who utters lies and who imbibes intoxicating drinks? Who commits the five evil acts that bear fruit without delay? Therefore, there is nothing wholesome or unwholesome. There is no one that does or makes another do unwholesome or wholesome acts. And there is neither fruit nor result of good or bad deeds. Also, revered Nagasena, if someone were to kill you, there would be no murder. You have no teacher, no preceptor, no ordination. If you say, co-farers in the holy life, address me as Nagasena, what is this Nagasena? Is it, revered sir, the hairs of the head that are Nagasena? No, sire. Are the hairs of the body Nagasena? No, sire. Are the nails, the teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, membranes, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, stomach, feces, brain, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, lymph, saliva, mucus, joint fluid, or urine, are any of them Nagasena? No, sire. Is material form, revered sir, Nagasena? No, sire. Or feeling, perception, mental formations, or consciousness, are any of them Nagasena? No, sire. Then, revered sir, are material form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness altogether Nagasena? No, sire. Well then, revered sir, is Nagasena apart from material form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness? No, sire. Revered sir, though I have been asking you repeatedly, I do not see this Nagasena. Nagasena is only a sound. For who here is Nagasena? You, revered sir, have spoken a falsehood, an untruth. There is no Nagasena. Venerable Nagasena then spoke thus, "You, sire, have been delicately nurtured as fits your noble birth. If, sire, you walk at noontime on the hot scorching ground, trampling on sharp grit, pebbles, and sand, your feet will hurt you, your body will be tired, your mind will be disturbed, and you will suffer bodily pain. Now, did you come on foot or in a vehicle? I, revered sir, did not come on foot. I came in a chariot. If, sire, you came in a chariot, show me the chariot. Is the pole the chariot, sire? No, revered sir. Is the axle the chariot? No, revered sir. Are the wheels the chariot? No, revered sir. Is the body of the chariot, the flagstaff, the yoke, the reins, the goad, are any of them the chariot? No, revered sir. Then, sire, are the pole, the axle, the wheels, the body, the flagstaff, the yoke, the reins, the goad, all together the chariot? No, revered sir. Well then, sire, is the chariot apart from the pole, the axle, the wheels, the body, the flagstaff, the yoke, the reins, and the goad? No, sire. Sire, though I have been asking you repeatedly, I do not see this chariot. Chariot is only a sound. What then is the chariot you say you came in? You, sire, have spoken of falsehood and untruth. There is no chariot. You are king over all India, a mighty monarch. Of whom are you afraid that you speak a lie? Let the Bactrian Greeks and all the monks listen to me. This King Milinda says, I have come by chariot. But on being asked to show the chariot, he does not show it. Is it proper to approve of that? When Venerable Nagasena had spoken thus, all the Bactrian Greeks applauded him and told King Milinda, Now, sire, speak if you can. King Milinda then addressed Venerable Nagasena. I am not, revered sir, speaking a lie. It is because of the pole, because of the axle, the wheels, the body, the flagstaff, the yoke, the reins, and because of the goad that chariot exists as a mere designation. It is good, sire, that you understand a chariot. Even so it is for me, sire, because of the hairs of the head, etc., because of the urine, because of material form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, consciousness, that Nagasena exists as a mere designation. However, in the ultimate sense, there is no person as such that is found. This, sire, was spoken by the nun, Vajira, in the presence of the Blessed One. Just as when the parts are rightly set, the word chariot is spoken. So when there are aggregates, it is the convention to say a being. It is wonderful, revered Nagasena, it is marvelous. Your explanations are brilliant. If the Buddha were still here, he would applaud. It is good, Nagasena. Here we have the exposition of the chariot and a reference to Vajira.
When I heard that the first time, or I think if you ask those questions to most people, when you say when all the parts together, is that the chariot? I think most people would say yes, mm-hmm. that is the chariot.
Yeah.
So, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, when one could say that and ask that question, then, you know, sometimes the reply could be something like, okay, so let's say all of these parts together are the chariot, or all the parts of the body are who we are. Okay, so go backwards. You know, take away the wheel. Does that mean it's not the chariot anymore? Mm-hmm. Or take away my one hand. So does that mean that this isn't me anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, and take away my other hand, take away my leg, take away this leg, take away, you know, all sorts of things one by one. When does it stop being me? So then I think that kind of argument can point out that it's a collection of various parts, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they all have to be there to receive the same designation, that it's just merely a designation.
When I first read that, I also thought of all the parts of the chariot in a pile on the ground. You know, there's all the parts together, mm-hmm. but more of the relationship between them to indicate
the quality. For the other comparison, like if you take 10 chariots and then you say, you know, what makes each one of those a chariot, there is no real essential property to any one of them. Because mm-hmm. they're all completely different, but they're all called chariot.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to explain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just basically coming back to, you know, the reflection of the five aggregates, and trying to just sort of dismantle the assumption of self around any of them or all of them or none of them as being self or being in self or self being in them, that it's all really just looking at the individual aggregates as functions, and trying to just not come up with any conclusion about what self is or what the body is or what the aggregates are, but using it as a tool for reflection to stop the actual assumption of a permanent, everlasting sense of self. It's more, it's sort of like a strategy. The contemplation is a strategy rather than trying to define any kind of metaphysical truth.
In your own practice, do you just like go on your Dhamma path and think, okay, for this session I'm going to contemplate the five aggregates? Or how do you use that strategy?
Well, there's all sorts of different ways. My favorite way is using the Anattalakkhana Sutta. A couple of years ago, was recommended to me by Ajahn Yatiko to just memorize some of the suttas in English. And so I did that one and just find, when the mind is quiet or trying to settle down, for me, just going through and reflecting on it phrase by phrase, particularly different. Because it comes at that reflection from several different angles in that sutta itself, and at different times I find it's more useful to contemplate, say, impermanence, and other times it's more useful to contemplate the dukkha aspect of it, and sometimes it's more fruitful just to go directly to reflection on not self. But it's really nice because it's got all of kind of those different approaches within the one sutta. So just wherever I'm at, it's a real useful thing. But it was one of the good pieces of advice that I'm glad I took.
So, in Prasadero's style, just grouping all together, it's like this?
It's just like this. Or asking the question, who am I?
I mean, there can only be one sort of, configuration of the five khandhas at any moment. So.
Mm-hmm. It's like this now. Yeah. And it's like this now. That's true. Brings it right into the present moment experience. And just contemplating how, over many years, they all change. If it's hard to see the change in the five khandhas kind of on a moment-to-moment basis, sometimes it's easier to get a perspective of looking back 10 or 15 or 20 years and saying, is the physical body the same? Is the, are the feelings and perceptions and patterns and habits of mind and all that, are they the same as they were then? And you can see the vast difference over a period of time.
Yeah, that's a great comparison that the Buddha talks about as well, and others have shared with about just, the day you were born, is it the same? Is it really like that you were named, your name, you might have that same name now? It's just not, there's a continuity there.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no truth in terms of like those things, those physical bodies being actually the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally, totally different.
That's a question I'm not sure how to say this exactly. If the task is to kind of fully understand, if you kind of have an affinity for seeing form very clearly, does fully understanding form kind of have an effect on how you understand perception, feeling, the others? Do you understand it, or do you have to kind of really look at all of them, or can you really focus on one if you really see it clearly?
what I've heard is that, I mean, you know, at some point the full understanding would, you know, come through all of, into all of the five khandhas, but that at least in our tradition, the Thai forest tradition, it really, and you can see it in the suttas as well, there's a heavy stress on contemplation of the body in particular. There's a lot of identification that, you know, occurs with the body, and it's also something that's pretty tangible and can be easily broken down and seen into its component parts. And it's kind of right here and right now. It's sort of a present moment kind of an experience that you can tune into. So there's a lot of emphasis on developing the insights around contemplation of the, you know, the material body. And with that as a basis, and you know, you can see it in a lot of the other suttas as well, that, you know, basically the Buddha says, if you don't have, you know, these insights into the body, you know, into the three characteristics regarding the body, then there's, you know, no way you're going to be able to be liberated. But having said that, that, you know, once, you know, using that as a basis for practice, then it's easier to extrapolate the same kind of insights to the other aggregates, the feelings, because the feelings are often very much connected with the body and the bodily experience. And then it does get more subtle with perceptions and mental formations. But with a firm basis of insight into the body, then it's more easy to work with the insight on the others. But also for some people, it really works better to kind of work with all of them at different, you know, together, rather than just singling one out. So you kind of have to experiment, I think, and find out what works for you, and keep on deepening that, and kind of remain open to the others as well. Hey, it's 7 o'clock. So just to give people a little preamble to tomorrow, I was looking at all the possibilities. There's a lot of suttas, and trying to sort through them and figure out a way to structure the reading. So just a little hint is that I've kind of loosely grouped the ones that I was interested in talking about into themes around the gratification, danger, and escape, and to try and sort of organize them in that kind of a sequence. So we'll be talking about that framework a bit tomorrow in regard to the five khandhas, and then sort of doing a gradual progression through those particular areas with a lot of overlap and fluctuation, because a lot of the suttas kind of talk about all of those aspects even in one sutta. So it won't be perfectly categorical, but that's kind of the tack we'll take.